was not sure how I felt about it as I was watching it, other than it looked really cool, and I didn't enjoy my very specific generation being targeted for nostalgic music like that.
Hey, welcome to Taking It Down, the TV and streaming podcast from the Alabama Take. We give thoughts that range from complex to simple, from analytical to basic about shows and movies on TV. I'm Blaine Duncan, editor-in-chief of the website The Alabama Take. I've always enjoyed determining why I like and dislike things, and I have a little bit of a side hustle as an English teacher, so hopefully that lends itself to our busy listeners who want some insight. It's great for listeners that it's not just me breaking down what you want to know. It's Adam Morrow, our erudite touring and studio musician who keeps up with fine literature, Donovan Reinwald, who specializes in media at a New England college and loves film, old books, and more. And Natalie Morrow. She's the first person to go to about fantasy, sci-fi, comics, trashy reality TV, and Beyonce's music. We're here for lovers of television who are just too busy for anything more than the series or movie itself, or maybe for the person who just does not want the typical critic or Hollywood adjacent analysis. Big nor'easter coming through. Donovan.
Is that what we're calling Donovan now?
That's how we introduce Donovan. Donovan's here, Adam's here, Natalie's here. The gang's all here, the full crew. It's the first time we've been together since 2023, at least in a digital presence of one another. And we're going to go around the room and tell what New Year's resolution we've already broken. Ready? Go.
We still do those?
Yeah. Oh, no, I didn't. Not this year.
I'm abstaining. It's like that Seinfeld episode.
Classic. Let's not bury the lead. Our big segment this week's the film Saltburn over on Amazon Prime. That's how we're getting around to it. You know, we do streaming movies and TV. It's on Amazon Prime, but it's been the talk of the town for a minute. Funnily enough, it's a movie that one Jacob Sanders DM'd me about over Christmas break. And he was just eager to rant about it. And I knew nothing about this film going into it other than the two leads. And a little bit of a headline about a particular thing, but I figured. It really, honestly, was a pretty big spoiler, looking back, but because it mapped out something. If you want to wait and watch Saltburn, then come back to this segment by all means. If you are here for Fargo, skip ahead to the time-stamped part for that latest episode on Fargo. We're talking Saltburn. Here's just a little bit if you want it, but go in blind if you can. The movie stars... It's not Barry Keoghan. It's not Keegan. I'm mispronouncing his last name. It's Barry Keoghan. Keoghan, maybe?
I thought it was Barry Keoghan.
It's maybe something like that. Barry Keoghan. Anyway, you know him. He's from Dunkirk. He's from, oh gosh,
Banshees.
Thank you. Banshees. The Banshees movie we loved. He stars as this guy, Oliver. He's a new student at Oxford in 2006, give or take. And he's just quickly smitten by Jacob Elordi's Felix. Now, Jacob Elordi's from Euphoria, primarily, but he also played Elvis recently in the movie Priscilla. Anyway, this guy Felix is a much more wealthy and charming collegiate guy. Don't go into it without knowing more. Or, excuse me, with knowing more. Written and directed by Emerald Fennell, who also wrote and directed Promising Young Woman. Anybody see that one?
Mm-mm. Haven't seen it.
Me either. Kind of, that was a COVID year movie. That's why I think none of us got around to that.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, let's draw the line. Ready? Go.
Oh, is it tub time yet?
I was about to say draw the line in the tub.
Well, you could draw the line in the dirt.
No.
Dig a hole in the dirt.
If these are the only two things people can talk about this movie, then is it a good movie? Because I think it is a good movie, but
none of those are on my notes.
Good.
Neither of those are in my notes.
That's all anybody talks about.
That they're just on my mind.
Just Adam had joked about them already before recording. Just it's
why infuriating.
I'm gonna go ahead and light this conversation on fire and say this: I love this fucking movie.
Have you seen The Talented Mr. Ripley?
No, I haven't.
I was honestly,
but that's
curious.
A play. It's definitely a play on this, and I think if I'd seen it, yeah, I might not have liked this one as much because I would have recognized it's doing a very similar thing. But I just loved Saltburn.
I thought it was more of like a twist on Ripley. I've read the book, and I've seen who's in that one, the Matt Damon one,
mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh, okay, like this is kind of a we're in fertile territory here.
Yeah, very much.
Talented Mr. Ripley has an insane cast.
Yes, it
too. When people were comparing the two films, it's like, well, will these two main actors go on to the heights that, everyone did from Talented Mr. Ripley? Maybe, but because they're both very good. But that was a pretty insane collection of people.
That was a lightning in a bottle kind of moment, because it like got right. a ton of people like right as they were about to become
on
superstars.
Yeah.
Here we are again, though, with Natalie hating it, me loving it. Let's
Hold on. I did not hate this movie.
Oh.
I hated those scenes.
On.
I think this movie would have been just as good without those two scenes.
I'm fine with that.
I think that I could lose one of the scenes, but not both of the scenes.
Which one would you cut?
I don't know that he had to commune with nature in the way that he did.
He fucked the grave. Come on, we can say it on there.
It wasn't even scripted. I read that wasn't even scripted. He just started doing it.
Is that true?
Yeah. That was just like, hey, I'm gonna try something in this next take, and that's what he tried.
Which is funny, because as it was happening, I looked at Natalie and I said, how did they convince this man, who is a very good actor and has been in great stuff and will continue to be in great stuff for the rest of hopefully a long life that he's just at the start of a career of, to do this scene that will be available to all of us for all of time now?
Guess it didn't take a lot of persuading.
Have y'all ever wanted to fuck a grave?
You mean Wuthering Heights?
Or just dirt. Let's just, yeah, dirt. You ever wanted to stick your dick in some dirt?
Oh, there's a difference between a grave and dirt.
That's spoken like a man who's thought about it.
Okay, so you mean just ran off what I loved about it? Because I got a list going. I really love this movie. I don't know.
I do, because I think that I was not sure how I felt about it as I was watching it, other than it looked really cool, and I didn't enjoy my very specific generation being targeted for nostalgic music like that.
That was like when the Arcade Fire hits, it's like,
In the same way that I don't like it when the Eagles congratulate Julio Jones as the old man of the team when he makes a good catch.
Right.
Go ahead, Blaine.
Tough one. Yeah. MGMT.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was in there, too.
Huge.
Mr. Brightside, a little bit. Yeah, that's you guys. No, I loved it, so let me just quit saying that. Here's some reasons why, and y'all can stop me and chime in. I have loved Oliver. He may be my new cinematic hero. And here's why.
I think you might need to examine your life choices, Blaine.
No, I know. No. He sees the filthy, opulent rich and takes them down from the inside for greed. Yeah, but so what? Who gives a shit? Let me be rich for a minute. Okay. I'm on board.
I think there was a really good New York Times review that I think Natalie may have actually written.
Pseudonym.
And a New Yorker one that both of them basically said that there is, I think the New Yorker one made the incel comparison and said that there's like a void at the center of this, and that it's kind of wishful thinking to think that the rich, you know, that youth is wasted on the young and wealth is wasted on the wealthy in the same way, like that they just kind of happen into it and are idiots, because if they're idiots, then it makes them more hateable because they didn't do anything to earn it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, in this setup, they certainly didn't do anything to earn their wealth, it doesn't seem like, but it does kind of make for a straw man of a class argument, I think. They could have had more teeth.
I did see it phrased, it's less eat the rich and more become the rich, and I was like, okay, well, I'm fine with that too, because who doesn't want more money? I sit here and twiddle my thumbs and think about it every day. Now, would I kill a college friend for it? Yeah. For that kind of castle? Yeah.
How many murders?
Would I fuck his grave? Yeah, exactly. Would I fuck his grave? No.
What about his mom?
Did he ever have... He never did. Was that implied that he would have? Yeah, I think it would.
I don't know
either.
Do you think this movie is going to imply anything?
No, it's not, right?
They're not
right?
holding back on anything.
Right. That's the one thing I would have cut, speaking of cut. I would have probably cut the grave scene. I think I would have cut that. But I would have cut the ending where he's dancing around, because that's implied too. There, but it's also, it does a little bit of a recap where it shows you... Hey, he really meant to do all these things?
I would have cut that.
I was like, what? Didn't you pick up on that? The only one that came as a surprise was the bicycle tire. I thought, oh, he was behind the bicycle tire. I didn't think of that. But everything else I saw painted on the wall.
I thought the bicycle tire thing was kind of immaterial to the movie, right? Where it's, I would have cut that because it's like, we get it. He's a snake in the grass, you know? Like,
although if they had only had the bicycle tire part of that recap and then cut it there, that would have been okay for me.
Leave a little ambiguity.
Yeah, this is the first domino that fell in this dude's plan.
I like that it takes this obsession / love story and then, you know, takes a little twist to it. Anybody could have seen it coming, but I'm not one of those people who watch movies like that. So it always catches me by surprise. I'm like, oh, we're really talking about class here. Okay, I'm with you. Or, you know, other things. I thought the performance he brought to Oliver was just wild. He was being asked to do a lot, and he did it. Beyond the obvious. I mean, like, I'm talking about just with his eyes, with his expressions. He was doing subtle things. I found him captivating. I couldn't take my eyes off the screen.
I felt like our friend Barry was very good, yes.
I'm very disappointed that Farley was never killed. That guy was detestable, right?
I mean, we didn't like him.
He was kind of worse. And his speech at the party, you know, just to Oliver was a bit much, I thought. That was another of the, like, I know that you're not going to show and not tell me at this point of this film that the subtlety is not really going to be the strong suit, but it was still a lot.
I like the title a lot because I wondered after the first mention of the castle being called Saltburn, I thought, why name this movie after an estate? Isn't this about unrequited or crazy obsessive love, dangerous love? Why would you name it? And then, you know, toward the end where you get the idea that, no, he's really kind of after them, their money, the castle. It's like, oh, that adds up. So I don't know. I thought it was well done, really well made.
Interesting that you came in thinking that it was about the forbidden or unrequited love or whatever, because I really didn't have any thoughts, and that would have shaped my viewing a lot more.
Yeah, the headline I had read was the grave scene. It was something like Barry Keoghan, I can't remember, something about, but you got the implication that he probably got naked with a grave, and I was like, you shouldn't put that in the headline.
Well, the headline stayed in your memory, so I guess it
yeah. It worked, right?
It made me know going in that he was probably into Felix's character. So,
one question that I had when I was thinking it through before we got together today, when he's talking at the beginning of the movie and it's kind of setting up that relationship, even mm-hmm. before they meet, who's he talking to?
The mom.
Yeah. And I wasn't crazy. I wasn't crazy about that choice either. Talking to the mom. It would have been, I think, a more fun experience if it felt like he was really talking to the audience there.
Is it explicitly shown that he's talking to the mom?
He's wearing the same clothes. And
but is he in that shop, maybe?
No, it's in the like the bedroom, hospital room deal.
Okay.
Right before him.
Natalie, did you pick up on that when we watched it?
Once it showed her in the room, I was like, oh, that's where he's been. Because I kind of thought like he was like being interrogated the whole time.
Right.
That's what I thought.
Until that scene. It's like, oh, he's just doing the thing that all bad guys do and monologuing at the end toward the person he's about to murder.
Right. I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop on him getting caught for something.
Ripping the breathing tube out. That's intense. I felt that one.
I feel like the police are not very good at their jobs around the Saltburn estate.
That one, yeah, when he rips the breathing, how do you fake that? There's so many in this movie world that they have created at that point, ways to dispose of the mom. why do the one, how are you going to put the breathing tube back?
I guess he could.
I don't know.
I don't know either. It's a movie.
Yeah, and it's in the mansion genre of like maybe weird things just happen and
the gothic.
Yeah, and they come to investigate the first murder, Felix's murder. It's kind of like, well, this I thought that was one of the interesting parts, was the way that the family related, especially the dad, to the police.
Yeah.
Of like, yes, y'all are in charge technically, but you're also on my property. And like, this estate and what it represents is older than your institution, possibly. So I'm letting you on to our land, but you also come and go at my discretion. So like, you could see how they blurred edges there to make that maybe possible, but as the body count was racked up, it just got less and less believable.
I mean, if you've got a woman in a house plugged up to that much medical equipment, alarm bells are going to go off when something's not working. And somebody's going to come into the room because it is their full-time job to stay there and monitor her.
Yeah, you would.
Or just wait it out, you know?
No, he didn't have the patience.
He waited until the dad died of seemingly natural causes, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. He did. That seemed to be almost like a 15-year jump they wanted to imply. I forget where mm-hmm. I read that. Donovan, what Adam had said about Sir James's encounter with the police reminds me a lot of what we had talked about with Fargo.
Yeah, actually, right? Yeah.
You got...
It was kind of doing, similar.
You don't come stuff, into my... Right? You're invited in, not because you're the police, but because... We own this place. You're just here because we are allowing you to be here.
Right, you're here on sufferance. I did think that this is not deep, but that what's her name? Rosalind or Rosamund?
Rosalind Pike?
Rosamund Pike and Richard Grant were having an excellent time playing the parents. They seemed like they were
oblivious. They were rich people.
Enjoying themselves 100% of this movie, and I did like that.
The aloof father, in some of the reviews, it said that they were, kind of hapless and hopelessly unself-aware and all these things. But the way that specifically the father was written to kind of snap to attention when things really needed doing kind of implied more to his character than the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's kind of the one who's like ushering people in and out of the estate mm-hmm. to keep things in balance. He was a better and smarter person than the folks around him.
Which is why Oliver had to wait for him to die.
Right. He was the foe, or the roadblock at least.
So you guys are confused. Oliver is the foe.
Well, he's the foil to his evil plans. Yeah.
Does it strain credulity for them not to know where Liverpool is?
I thought that was funny.
That made me laugh.
It was funny. But
the whole, like, if you're in England, then you laugh at that joke.
Gotcha.
I think. Yeah. Why would we ever go to the north?
Right. That was
well, their north is like our south.
That was
south,
the impression
right?
Right.
That was the impression I got, where it's like, why go above London?
Yeah.
Liverpool is, even their football teams are famous for booing the national anthem if it's ever played, these sorts of things. They hate the royalty. Yeah.
So where are you with Saltburn as a whole?
I don't think it's like the best thing I ever saw, but I enjoyed it. I did actually, at the end of it, I was like, oh, that was pretty good. Like, I could have changed some of the stuff we talked about here, especially the ending montage. I personally probably would have cut, but I thought Barry, however you say his name, Kagan?
Kagan, I think.
I thought he was great. I really did enjoy watching him. My only quibble is not a real quibble. There's no way in hell he's 19. he looks like a weathered old man already. I mean, he's only 31.
Jacob Elordi, though, was also fantastic, I thought.
No, everyone in here I thought was pretty good. And, a lot of fluid talk.
You say that as a positive?
Where do I land on it?
Yeah, where do you land as
Adam
a whole?
Says, okay. I don't know. I think the more I think about it and the more I talk about it, the more I don't like it. I thought after watching it, minus two scenes, I said it was a good movie, minus those two scenes. It's a little bit annoying to me, and maybe I'm just an old prudish millennial. I don't know. But it feels like so much media now is just about how scandalous can they be. Mm-hmm. It's just really annoying to me because it's like it's pointless because it's never needed or usually never needed. I don't really know what the message of this movie is supposed to be. Like, people talk about class warfare and all that, but I didn't really get that. And the more I think about it, the more I think it got that backwards. So I don't know. I don't think it was as good as I maybe thought it was. I think it was well acted. I think it looked great. But I don't know that it, I think it's good anymore.
The moral of this movie was don't make new friends.
Don't bring them home.
Don't bring your friends home under any circumstances.
I thought that it was kind of saying that those who are all anti-one percenter are would actually be just as bad if we got the chance.
I can't, I should credit the review, but somebody said there is like a shadow of a movie behind this actual movie that's very good. And I think I agree with that, that it hit some high notes. And like y'all had said, the acting was great. The cinematography and the visuals were bold and great. I unapologetically loved the soundtrack and uses of my college era tunes. So, but it just wasn't, yeah, it didn't have the, anything that was a success in my mind was because of what Barry Keoghan or Jacob Elordi or any of these other actors brought to it. And I do think we hadn't really talked about Jacob Elordi's performance, but I remember in Euphoria thinking if this dude does other stuff, it's going to be really hard not to just hope that he gets punched in the face at all times. But here he was being like a pretty complex character in a way. I don't know. Complex may be the right word for the may not be the right word for the writing, but his performance, you kind of had sympathy for a good-looking, rich young man, which is probably a sign of good acting. So, I like those things. The overall, what are you trying to say? I thought was pretty vapid.
He's Australian too, so he's changing up accents one. He's changing up his accents one more time. He's good, I think. I haven't seen him play Elvis. Be interesting to see him try that one on. But supposedly it's good, maybe. Okay, well, what we'll do is very short little break. You'll hear some music. Fast forward if you want. And Donovan and I are going to talk about the recent episode of Fargo. Yeah, we're here for this part to break down our ideas on the most recent couple of episodes of Fargo. Really gonna stick to the most recent one titled Blanket. If you're not that far with the series, you may want to return here when you're caught up. We got the fifth season of Fargo starring Juno Temple, John Hamm, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Joe Keery of Stranger Things fame. And we're going to be spoiling the most recent. I'm going to jump back an episode to one called Linda. I think that's where we
that was
to...
a good one.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good one.
Okay. That's kind of where I wanted to start asking you. How effective did you feel like getting Dot and Sheriff Roy's backstory was since it was presented with marionettes?
That really worked for me.
Okay.
There was something, I don't know if I can really describe, but there was almost like an added pathos or sadness seeing these puppets. Something about like the immobile puppet face as Roy is, you know, doing what he's doing to both of these women.
Abusing.
I mean, it was horrible, but I thought it was also, you know, in another way too, it was almost like I'm glad I didn't see scenes of, you know, that, violence and sexual abuse, you know, like that was all right with me too. But I felt like the puppets didn't minimize it. They brought it, especially like the maybe emotional heart of it isn't the right thing. But to me, that brought it more to the surface.
It was original. I thought it made it more frightening.
Mm-hmm. I think it says something about puppets are kind of weird and unsettling anyway, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, right. So like the Roy puppet, looking the way it did, acting the way it did, really made him like he's a monster.
Yeah, for sure. And it helps play up his monstrosity in the next episode.
Yeah, definitely. I felt like it. Now I read a New York Times critic who said they felt like the most recent episode wasn't being serious about domestic abuse. Like there was a lot of kind of winking. Like they used the Britney Spears cover when he's walking to her. I didn't feel that way though. I felt like between Linda and then the most recent episode, It takes it pretty fairly seriously.
Isn't the Britney Spears cover layering it a little because of her
complex abuse situation? And it was just like, I just thought the camera sticking on John Hamm's face the way it did is he's angry. Like, he doesn't have any noble or good emotion. He's just mad and he's going to hurt someone because he's mad.
Yeah. Back to the marionettes briefly. At first, I thought it was too much of a strain to try to get Dot to recount her life with Roy in that manner with the marionettes. But it did end up working for me a lot, so whatever it took to get there was fine in the long run. Having it played out with creepy dolls made it frightening for me.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if they did that because they weren't sure we would buy John Hamm at that level of frightening.
Maybe. He is a good actor, right? I mean, I do think that he could... I think he could do it. I'm glad they didn't make him.
Right. That might be it. Does he work as a villain outside of a comedy, a la, you know, Kimmy Schmidt, if you've seen him in that? Which is a very similar character.
I was going to say, not completely different.
Just played for comedy.
Yeah, he works for me as a villain. Yeah, have you ever seen... it's a different kind of villain, but, like, have you ever seen Baby Driver?
No. No.
I would give that one a thumbs up. Very enjoyable. But sort of spoilery. But, like, there's different antagonists, and he's one of them in the in the film. And, you know, he's kind of scary.
Yeah.
He can be kind of scary.
He can be. He's so charismatic that that has to be a part of the villainy, I think.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say that, like, Don Draper's a villain, right? But, like, he's electric, and sometimes he's intense, and he can be scary, right? Like, you can... He plays those scenes where, you can see why for Peggy sometimes, like, maybe it's scary to speak up because, like, you know, he is intense and care. But I think that the charisma and the intensity are part of the performance, the portrayal there. Yeah. I have no problem buying John Hamm as a villain here, especially an elected villain, right? Because he does have that kind of, like...
Right.
He's kind of folksy, you know. He can kind of put it on. He can kind of, you know, he can talk to people and obviously manipulate them. But he'll still shoot you dead.
Yeah, and Juno Temple holds her own with him, obviously. Man, more
she's
so.
She's so good, isn't she?
Yeah.
I was honestly surprised because I was like, I've only seen her in Ted Lasso.
Yeah, same.
And that's just a very different role. So I was like, right. I'm not in the, you know, the first episode with the accent and everything. It's like, all right. But man, I feel like I'm sold on her.
Mm-hmm. So the most recent episode, we got a lot more of the family lawyer, Danish. What do you make of Dave Foley and his family lawyer here? Where's his moral compass, do you think?
I don't know if he has. He is kind of like the what was his, oh shoot, I can't think of it, Henry Pym character, right, in House of Usher, because he kind of seems like ultimately loyal without like a huge reason behind it. Maybe he just likes money, but like he's he's good though, especially like, and I did like the scene where he comes in like, he thinks he's got Roy over the barrel. Can just see how mad, like, John Hamm is furious. Yeah. He's like, if you're so smart, how come you're so dead?
Yeah.
You know?
Poor Danish shot in the gut, horrible
shot
way
in the
of
gut.
Dying.
He probably should have worried when John Hamm took out that pistol, or Sheriff Roy, I should say, took out that pistol. He might should have reconsidered things. You know who else I'm really loving here is... The state trooper, you know, he's...
Yes, and
he was a new girl. I'm sorry, I've completely...
His name
escapes
me.
15 minutes ago.
That's okay. His name escapes me as well. Yeah, he's back in a more pronounced role in this recent episode.
There was a... I don't know what it was, but, like, I loved when he's talking to Gator, and he has this moment of line delivery when he's like, they're almost here. You think they aren't, but consequences are coming. And it was just like the way he said it, and like the way that he portrayed like personal courage and bravery, like trying to get through to Mrs. Lyon no matter what, you know, to Dot, matter what.
He's very watchable in this episode as well because of with that line, but he just does. He played it well. You feel like he cares.
Yeah, very good.
So there's this actress. She plays one of the local police. And she was on the show her name is Rika Morjani.
Yeah.
Yeah. She plays the Minnesota State Deputy with the familial problems. They're getting good performance out of her. She is, I think it's possible that she has an Indian accent, usually. At least she didn't Never Have I Ever on Netflix. Now, she might have been putting that on there, too. She might have a very neutral accent, for all I know. But what she's doing here is totally different, nonetheless. And it's as good as what Juno Temple's doing with her voice.
Yeah.
You would never know she wasn't in the Midwest, I don't think.
I especially liked her because she's kind of one of, I feel like, the audience point of view characters, if that makes sense, where like she's kind of trying to figure out what's going on. And I like that, what they're doing with her with that. And I liked her and her interactions with the elder, Mrs. Lyon.
Yeah. And I'm kind of pulling for her. I'm like, take the job. Just take the cushy job, you know?
I love, this is not with those two episodes, but I did really enjoy Mrs. Lyon and Sheriff Tillman facing off. Because, like, somebody pointed at, some review I read was like, you know, she might actually be inclined to sympathize with his political viewpoint, right?
Which is where what we thought was going to happen.
Yeah, which is where, you know, she's like, you know, oh, you know, the whatever, what does she say, like the victimhood is ruining this country and things like that. But, like, she just, like, she's a powerful woman, and Roy, and she also kind of hates Roy's guts, and I love that. There's the bit where she's, like, talking about, you know, kind of his libertarian beliefs, where she's like, you know, so you want all that power and no responsibility. Do you know who has that? And Roy just goes, the president. And she goes, a baby. Man, yeah. John Hamm was... Yeah. on it with that line delivery.
It works so well, too, because the whole baby thing is that's a womanhood.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Ties into the womanhood. And then the impactful twist of this entire season is it's not some caper like we're used with Fargo, where some people can't pull off a heist and get shot and there's murders. But it turns out to be the power of women and domestic violence and abuse, not being able to hold them down. I did not see any of that coming.
No,
nor did I see us siding with Mrs. Lyon and her. What does she do? She buys up
debt collecting. I was going to say it's her method of making wealth is odious, to say the least.
Still not a fan of necessarily how she's made her earned her millions, I guess you could say, but she still is at least morally correct here. Like, when she finds out Dot was not just some tramp in her view, but an abused woman, she changes her mind.
I like to, this is kind of another relationship. I felt like the relationships of the characters have been really pretty good, except for, is it Liam? Whatever the Minnesota cop's husband is. He's terrible. Why did she take up
What is
him?
His name? Yeah, he's on screen so little, like but. He's there to set up his wife is just having to deal with so much damn shit.
I really enjoyed too the relationship of Dot and Wayne Lyon, because he is obviously, I don't necessarily mean this negatively, but like he's a weaker person. He's a weaker personality. He's not as strong willed.
But he's a very sweet and kind.
He's probably not as and like she doesn't. She truly seems to love him,
sure,
and value him and respect him. And I thought that was kind of a cool move, because like she is the stronger person there. And she could, I mean, sometimes when you are in a relationship and one person is stronger and one person is weaker in some ways, you know, it can be easy to be contemptuous of them and they're not doing, I just thought that was so good.
Now also, she admires that in him, that he's kind.
He's gentle.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's it.
I also like that Wayne's dad apparently always has like a gimlet, just wherever he's like he's in the just hospital. Nodding.
Well, it's just another example of this is this series or this season's about the women. It's that's where the power is, and it's a good.
Him, his dad, they're completely ineffectual. They would never be able to take on Roy, you know, or survive.
No,
frankly, when Dot has survived.
So. Two quick things to wrap. Ole Munk, or whatever his name is, he's in the back seat of Gator's car.
I live here. Yes, now.
Yes. Hey, he kills the wayward son.
I'm looking forward to how that's all gonna come together too. For sure. With the gator and Munch confrontation.
Because you gotta admit, there's some part of you who likes Gator because he's just been raised wrong.
I do kind of actually.
He's a victim too.
That is actually kind of the way I feel about Gator. Yeah. Where like, I mean, he's a prick.
Oh, and he's a piece of shit.
They do such a good job of just with the vaping and everything. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
But yeah, like they're between the puppet story and what we've seen is like he's so obviously desperate for his father's approval. Mm-hmm. And wants to, and will mold himself into the kind of man that he thinks his father will respect, which mm-hmm. is not a good person.
Yeah. Don't think he's going to get a chance to turn it around, though.
We'll see what happens. I'm honestly curious. I don't know. I'm very curious.
Yeah.
And I will say another thing too. I thought the bit with his like because he knows his mom is dead, right? So like, dots. Yes. I'm assuming he knows his mother's dead.
Yes.
So when Dot tells him she's seen him, that really messes with him.
Yeah, that's why it messes with him so much.
I thought he did a good job there.
Yeah, he did. And that goes to my second point, which is this episode definitely confirmed Dot's visit to the Lindas, the camp of Lindas, was dreamed or delusion or just not real.
She hadn't been getting a lot of sleep, I think.
That was it. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a something.
That episode was from waffle to waffle. Those moments were not real.
Exactly. And it, honestly, I mean, it was kind of like cruel in a way, but that actually really worked for me. And the, just the, like right now,
yeah,
where we leave Dot as she's like, oh no, like she realizes it, right? Like she's remembers as Danish's body is being stowed. Like this is probably the lowest she's ever been. And I like Juno Temple's performance because I just want each week I'm just like, how is she gonna get out of this now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same here. And two more episodes left of Fargo. We'll probably talk about them.
Yeah, this one's been appointment viewing. We usually watch it Wednesday nights because it's on Tuesday. You know, Beth's like, what do you want to watch? I'm like, we got Fargo. Oh, yeah. All right, yeah, let's watch it.
How's Beth liking it? She's
liking it a lot.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because it is comic and there's some funny parts, but it's really heavy. Like it's taking on big heavy stuff, and so to just not just be like, well, here's an 45 minutes of misery for myself every
that's true.
You know, like it's actually watchable and the characters are likable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of the characters, most the main of, characters yeah, anyway. Yeah.
You got a lot of likable ones, as it turns out.
It's good.
I would like for the show to come back around to the sin eating somehow. Me too.
That's my only complaint.
Like, can we get a little bit of that?
Just give me that weird, like they had like a couple episodes where it was like that weird stuff and I'm like, yeah, I'm here for this. And then they kind of, but you know, we still got two episodes left. We'll see what happens.
I doubt they're going to, there's just no way, surely. But hey, I'm not the show writer.
I just loved that they did that so much.
Yeah,
it was
me
so
too.
Out of left field. I loved it.
Yeah, gripping stuff. All right, that's the end of our podcast episode. Not really sure what's in store of us. If you're a listener, let us know what you think, where you stand, why you listen. Find us and all of the Alabama Take on social media. Give us a shout, and we'll be talking to you later. See everybody.